Welcome back, everybody, to this second of our classes on the topic of fear. And as you saw on the opening screenshot, that this is based upon the book that has just recently been released, or is about to be released in America, and soon after it will also be in India. And it's going to be released perhaps in print form, hard copy in America first. Soon it will be in India, but the digital format is available. And I hope to, in our last class, we posted that link if you wish to order a digital copy from Ananda Publications or from Crystal Clarity in America. It's available to you. And today, I'm going to talk about courage. And last week, the focus was on fear, and I made my point that obviously it's something that we want to be able to overcome. But at the same time, I'm going to also mention that fear does have its place. But let me begin with a little story first. It seems that in India, in a village, there lived a great saint who lived in the village, and you could say he lived outside the village, but because it was so close to the village, he took it under his aura, you might say, as a protective saint. And when any difficulties would come up in the village, the villagers would come to that yogi who was living outside in the countryside there and ask him for their help. Well, it so happened that at a certain time, perhaps many years ago, a disease was scourging the local countryside. Let's say it was smallpox was coming. It was taking away women, children, those who were susceptible to it. And as we know, this is actually what has happened in many countries. It was a scourge, and it still is. But mostly, fortunately, it's been eradicated in most places now. But in this time, it was prevalent. And so it came into the village, and the villagers saw that perhaps the local villages in the neighborhood were being affected by this. And they came to the saint and said, "Oh, sir, protect us from this disease. Is there a calamity that's coming?" And the saint, gave them his blessings, and he became aware. He called, you could say, he summoned the spirit of smallpox, the demon or the entity that was behind that. And he called the demon of smallpox and he said, "I want you to stay away from my village. You've been in the countryside, but this village, I want you to know, is under my divine protection and you're not allowed to be here." And the demon or the entity, the ghost, said to the saint, he says, "Well, sir, this is my duty. The divine plan is that smallpox, the disease travels, and it's my responsibility to be the one to bring it to here and there. And how can I possibly do my divine duty, my dharma, fulfill it?" And so he made a very convincing argument to the yogi and the saint. And the saint, and they compromise, says, "Well, I see what you're saying. And yes, you have your role to play, but you are only allowed to take 3 from my village." They agreed. And so the spirit of the smallpox departed, went on his way. And sure enough, people began to contract and die within the village. But it was far more than 3. And so hearing about this, the saint called this spirit back to him and admonished him very, very severely. "What? We had an agreement and you have broken your agreement." And he was chastising that spirit. And the spirit says, sir, "I only took 3. That's all I did. The rest died from fear." And you can see the point here. that oftentimes what happens is when they died of fear, who knows, they let themselves be open to the fear of what was happening. Now we maybe we should have used COVID, you know, for instead of smallpox here. But honestly, I don't want to make light of something which is so serious like that. But nevertheless, the point being that fear has the effect upon us, that emotional reactive state that weakens us and allows many negative things, you might say, to be able to enter into us because we make ourselves susceptible. Our aura is weakened because we have, you might say, agreed to be susceptible to those things of the world. And eventually, slowly, little by little, our aura becomes weakened. If it's not going to be one thing, it's going to be another. And so, what does it take? I mean, obviously, I could say this, but what does it take to be able to counter that? But we have to understand that fear, of course, just like that spirit, has its place, you might say, in the divine order, especially until we reach that state where we're no longer susceptible to it. But it has a place for us. Of course, it's a warning, it's a caution, it makes us apprehensive, makes us aware of situations, and it helps us in that sense. But yet, as I mentioned last week, when it becomes overly that way, it goes beyond its, you might say, its duty to help us to be able to prepare for eventualities. And then it becomes a means of suffering. So you could say, I used the story last week of the Korean priest who had attained that state of fearlessness. Well, we must understand that a person, when they get to that state, they have reached the state of, you might say, divine strength that allows them to be that way. But until it's because it's a divine quality. You could say courage is a divine quality. Lack of courage or fearlessness, as we were using that example, fearlessness is a divine quality. And we read in the Bhagavad Gita, 16th chapter, that when Krishna describes the divine and the demonic qualities, he lists courage first. When he was making that list, fearlessness is the word he uses, not courage. Fear, the absence of fear, the overcoming of fear, is one of the qualities of divinity. And so obviously there's a certain, the implication is by attaining that and by practicing that, we begin to help to spiritually, it helps us to rise spiritually. But interestingly enough, he doesn't, when he mentions the demonic qualities, he doesn't list fear. Fear is not necessarily, you might say, a demonic quality. It's a state of mind that we want to obviously overcome, but in and of itself, for a person of, you might say, lower awareness, it has its place. I know it's time-honored, I'm going to put the fear of God in you. there's a saying in English that way. And it goes back, of course, to, you know, the very fundamentalist preachers in Christianity. They gave sermons of fire and brimstone. In other words, you're going to be condemned to hell. You're going to be feared. God is to be feared. And you can even see this in the Old Testament of the Bible, that the sense of retribution comes to, and punishment comes to those who break the divine law. Now, we do suffer when we break divine law, but is fear the best way to impress that message onto our children? To be fearful. And pretty soon the poor child has, he's afraid to do this, he's afraid to do that. It's hardly the way to raise a child. Although, caution and apprehension, you have to. And they learn for themselves, actually, in a little way. And it's probably good to allow your children to learn the hard way within reason. And, you know, they touch that hot stove once, and they learn, I'm not going to do that. You don't have to teach them a second time. Well, this is the message of of the old-time religion, fire and brimstone. But interestingly, in the Bible, Jesus Christ and didn't teach that way. It's, you could say, he brought a new message. Love God, don't fear God. And this is the mark, you could say, of a more advanced soul, is to approach God, approach divinity with a feeling of love rather than fearfulness. And this is, you could say, as Jesus Christ did, it's a new dispensation. That's the approach. But yet, that old-time religion is perhaps appropriate for those people who need that, you know, to be fearful of situations. But when our consciousness is rise, we need to rise to something else. And that ability to face fear in a positive way, and this, you could say, is courage. We need to be able to have that courage to face those difficulties in life. And so when fear strikes, we want courage. And courage is that conscious action, to be willing to face with conscious action in the face of threats, to be able to, and it doesn't mean to be courageous, doesn't mean that you don't have fear. You see, it's, you know, fear is still there, and perhaps, but we've put it into more of a proper proportion. But now, which would be caution or apprehension, or it motivates us. And I think if anything, if you find any perhaps positive quality in fear, it would be as a motivator. And of course, that's probably what the preacher is trying to motivate the congregation to do the right thing, motivate to act right. But also, and as often is the case, as we learn to grow in maturity, we need outward stimulus to motivate us. Ultimately, of course, that motivation wants to be from in. We want to be motivated by something higher than fear, but it does have its place until we reach that level. And so this is why you could say it's encapsulated with what Swami Sri Yukteswar, yes, it says, look fear in the face and it will cease to trouble you. And this, of course, takes courage. But courage doesn't, you know, there's some qualities that we have to add to that to, in order for us to help. What does it do? What do we need to do in order for us to be courageous? Well, one of the things, of course, is to be prepared. And I think if you suffer from fear, take action. And that action, in other words, fear sometimes has the potential to paralyze us. We don't know what to do. We're stuck. And one of the things that is often recommended, and what I perhaps, if I've been a little bit nervous about something, for example, when I was a young man, I was tasked, you might say, by Swami Kriyananda to begin doing satsangs, public satsangs, which was extremely frightening for me. I was had terrible stage fright when I was young, and I'd never given a talk in my life. And, you know, stage fright is said to be one of the most common fears that everybody shares. Well, I didn't know what to do. And so I was just petrified by the thought of even doing it. And I remember I was notified I was supposed to give my first talk. I was given 2 weeks' notice. Thank God. Maybe not thank God. Maybe it would have been better if it had been the day before. I wouldn't have had to suffer those 2 weeks. But I used those 2 weeks, I think, wisely. Because when you're in desperation, what do? You have to act. You have to do something. And this in itself is an antidote to fear. But obviously, if you can act appropriately in a way to prepare yourself, and even fear, if you know that something is coming, mentally don't dwell on it in the sense of a mental fearful state, but think, what can I do? And I think just the act of preparing, of getting ready and to be able to face that fear, because you know you're going to face it, that 2 weeks was going to go by, that in itself brings a certain amount of consolation, because it takes your mind off of dwelling upon that fear and puts you into action to start preparing for them. So consequently, if you're afraid of public speaking, well, practice, rehearse, study, you know, Mike, and I suspect, so in a sense, fear did have a positive aspect there. And it says, I was so afraid of public speaking that I prepared. And I don't know if I would have ever studied the teachings. And, you know, it didn't go away for years. I don't think I would have studied as much as I did if I hadn't been nervous to some degree. And of course, I had a mentor friend in those days, an elderly man who advised, he says, you know, what fear does, a little bit of stage fright is a good thing because it stimulates the adrenaline and gets you moving and gets you going. And sure enough, that's actually what happened. But the preparation, and you begin to ask others, you begin to study, whatever it takes. And if there's many types of fear, if you anticipate and use and caution and approach, then you find you have something it gives you, and it summons the courage to be able to face that. And what does it give you? And this is, you might say to me, a little bit more specific. Courage, to summon up courage, you need to have confidence. You see, and preparation, study, all of these things, they gave a sense of confidence of, I can do this. I can face this. The next time this comes, I can do this. And particularly that confidence comes when you have a little bit of experience. I did it once before, and now I think I can do it again. Now, what is that saying also? When we have experience of some high positive outcome, it gives us faith. I don't just have belief I can do it. I actually have faith I can do it. So if we face small problems with courage, we then find that facing whatever it is gives us a certain amount of confidence, and we've faced a small problem, we've done it, and that builds faith that we do have tools to be able to meet whatever comes. But yet there's practical. Let's go a little we can bring to our aid. Physical tasks. If you're afraid of something, if fear is bothering you, do something physical. Because why? It engages the body. And because there's certain, you could say, body chemistry, fear disrupts it. Yeah, in an adverse way. The putting the body in motion and doing physical activity, exercise. I used to, in those days, I remember I used to, wintertime, I would gather wood and chop the wood and make firewood. And I'd just go out there and I'd start chopping wood, chop, chop, chop. And it took my mind off that. But the physical activity itself generated a positive flow. It took my attention off that and put it on something positive. You could sort of think also what's happening when you're fearful. The problem with that, particularly spiritually, is that we tend to become self-absorbed. We're thinking of ourselves. Well, I need to survive. You know, it's a survival mechanism. But in all sorts of little ways, and I remember in those couple of weeks when I was, giving that lecture, that I couldn't get it out of my mind. And so, and your world becomes very, very small. And when that contractive feeling comes into you, and for whatever the cause, what's an antidote for that? Action, of course, I just mentioned that, but also serving in some way, getting out there and giving of yourself to others. Because you see, fear causes us to be contractive in our own little self. So whatever we can do to expand that sense to others, to reach out beyond our little self-involvement is going to be helpful for that fear. Finding, we tend to become problem-oriented rather than solution-oriented. So consequently, other various physical things we can do is we can start to say a mantra. Repeat a phrase. And I know sometimes I would just start Om Guru, Om Guru, Om Guru, trying to just bring a divine consciousness within, but also taking my mind off of the things that were worrying. And so, you could probably go on the internet and find dozens of very commonsensical solutions, visualize positive outcomes, all of these sorts of things. But there's, of course, I think as devotees, we know that in focusing our attention just on ourselves, something else is being excluded from that. Thinking of others, yes. You know, thinking of solutions, yes. But divinity, maybe? Might it certainly be that the confidence, the help that is ours if we call upon divine help, is we begin to forget. You see, fear makes us forget that larger ideal that we're trying to impress upon ourselves, that I'm not in this struggle alone. The divine is with me at all times. And this is something, of course, we're trying to bring into our life and our consciousness every day of our lives through our spiritual practices, our meditation, our devotion. And you could say, in this sense, if for nothing else, fear acts as a motivator to say, oh my God, or as they say, there's no atheists in a foxhole during wartime. Everybody's calling to God, save me. And of course, the consciousness or the thought behind that of not forgetting where the source of our strength, the source of our guidance comes from, and it's coming from the divine. So in a sense, to the degree that it motivates us to be able to think in those terms, yeah, it's not the best motivator, but it does motivate us at least. Now, when I say act, you know, do something, to be a positive, in other words, energy is coming out of us rather than us, oh, we're just reacting and contracting, be a positive influence. It wants to be a considered action. Something that's in a considered action would be something that you perhaps thought about, it seems like a good solution, and it's also, you might say, it should be something considered an appropriate action, not foolhardy action. You know, there's when a person says, oh, fear's coming, I'm going to do something, and it's foolish. You know, and this is, again, fearlessness can be taken out of context as well. I'm fearless. Well, other people might say, well, you may be fearless, but you're also foolhardy. And so consequently, they're not necessarily being fearless in that sense. That's not what that priest in Korea was demonstrating. He wasn't foolhardy. He had confidence, probably based upon experience, to do the appropriate thing that was appropriate for him. So we want to take considered action. We want to, that difference. And what is the difference between a considered action and merely a reaction out of fear? Well, it's the difference between, which often we bring this example up, it's a difference between response to life and reaction to life. Because life itself is a process of the spiritual quest, is learning to be overcome the reactive process. Something happens to us and we emotionally react. So you could say reaction is based upon emotions, fear being one of them. We react, and it's simply, you might say, a biochemical process that, oh, the tiger's there, adrenaline comes, I run away, climb a tree, whatever it might be. Now, climbing a tree is not a bad thing, because that would be a considered action rather than just cowering before the tiger. Well, the response is something that we have considered. And in America, we have, and I have friends who serve, we have people here at Ananda Village who serve as what's called EMT, emergency response technicians. In other words, the people that when you call 911 for emergency help, you know, to come, I've got a dangerous situation here, they notify the local fire departments and emergency response departments, and they come to help in emergencies. Well, the people that often do that are called emergency medical technicians, and they are a response team. They respond to emergencies. They don't react to an emergency. Do you want your doctor being reactive? Oh my God, you know, you want him to be responsive, to take conscious action, rather than having all these chemicals running through his brain, which means adrenaline and all those fear chemicals that are stimulated. You're considered, you respond. And this is how we want to be in life when any kind of difficulty comes to us. We want to respond appropriately. And as we do, and we learn to do it in little ways, we gain confidence. And this is what training, and this confidence comes by preparation and training. You know, there's a lot of things we can learn appropriate to any situation. If you're, and I, like I say, just taking action in some positive ways starts to relieve the fear. Whether it actually helps you or not depends upon the degree that you perhaps get training in something. So if you're going to be asked to sing an oratorio or whatever it might be, the choir, you're in a choir, they rehearse. If you're going to be in a play, you learn your lines. You do the work required to respond appropriately. You do training. You could say, I know they give classes. You could go learn, if you're afraid of physical violence, you could go learn martial arts, you know, and, you know, go learn how to do, you know, judo or jujitsu or whatever, one of those. Dancing, if you have social fears, learn, you know, I remember when I was a young fellow in school, I didn't know how to dance, and I was always very awkward at social occasions where that might come up, and I absented myself. I look back and I said, well, that was a stupid thing. I should have learned to dance, or I should have learned to interact with other people. If you have these sorts of social fears, learn to sing, be very helpful, acting, all of these things. If you're already, and again, coming back to the tiger, if you're in tiger territory, learn how to climb trees, you might say, is one thing to do. Of course, it's symbolic of larger things, but ask for advice. Mimic what other people are doing. In the moment, learn to breathe, to be able to keep yourself in the center. Oftentimes when something difficult, isn't that one of our sort of intuitively natural reactions where we're in a point of fear, we find, oh, we stop breathing. If fear comes and, oh my God, you go breathless in the wrong way. And all of a sudden, you find you're very tense. Count to 10, what they say, you take deep breaths, you begin to give yourself a bit of a physical, mental pause. And when you do that, another quality, another tool manifests itself. And this is, you begin to gain perspective. Oftentimes, fear, as you could say, is you're fearful of something that really doesn't exist, like those villagers and the ghost. They saw sickness and they opened themselves to that fear. If you gain perspective on the situation, well, gosh, it's really not a ghost. It's just some curtains shimmering in the wind. It's not an evil spirit. And so fear, you could say, drives away perspective when it's emotionally reactive, emotionally reactive. Or at least you could say, it distorts our perception of what is real. And we begin to imagine the worst possible outcome, and we lose that perspective. And you find that but a person who's able to maintain that center, you've practiced, you've gained the power through meditation, through yoga practice, through all of the things that we teach at Kriya Yoga, you gain the practice to control your mental reactive process. So consequently, when other people are nervous, you're calm. You've learned to induce calmness. And this is why we meditate. This is why we practice Kriya Yoga. This is why we do these things, to be able to control that reactive process and to put it into action in small ways. And if we don't practice putting these things into practice in daily life, switching our state of consciousness in the moment. So consequently, somebody comes up to you and is very angry. You don't know why they're angry, but you know they're angry. Well, some people are just, oh my God, and, you know, cower because of that. The other person says, because they're afraid. But other people say, oh, somebody comes up, I put myself in my center, I'm calm. What's the problem here? And then that calmness often has the very effect of reducing the tension of the situation, to be able to respond appropriately and calmly and positively in the midst of whatever happens. In other words, embodied by that statement, I stand unaffected in the midst of life's trials and storms, unmoved, emanating, you could say, a positive vibration. The ability to have that, to be calm and centered in the midst of whatever happens, this is a mark of courage. It comes through courage. It's not courage in itself. It can be seen that way, but it really comes as a result of practicing, facing, and learning how to switch my consciousness from one state to another. Practice being calm. Practice being peaceful. And then these are action statements. And action, as we said, when you take action, it begins to drive away fear. It's a challenge, you might say, for those who are, you know, more inspired by that word. When you face challenges rather than run from challenges, and as you do that, our sense of who we are, our sense of confidence, our sense of perspective begins to expand. And in expansion, those inner feelings of peacefulness, calmness, joyfulness begin, and who and what we are begin to expand. If we have contraction, we suffer, and we begin to diminish. Now, this topic, I was asked a question, it was sent in this last week about anxiety, and a very common trait these days. People are saying, thinking about this word anxiety, I thought, one is, there's two ways to approach this. In the mild sense, anxiety is just another name for worry. And I think fear and worry, they go together. And you could say everything that I've been speaking about in terms of fear go with anxiety. But there's often a general, and anxiety can be general, and you're not sure why you're anxious. It just comes. You might say then it becomes something of a medical condition. But then there's another sort of anxiety that is also seemingly come to the fore in public consciousness over the last couple of decades, and that's panic. And they're anxiety attacks, and panic attacks, sometimes they're called. And I never quite realized anything about this until I experienced one of these. I experienced those years ago when I was younger, and I looked it up in the dictionary, and when the internet came along, this may have been before internet days, but I couldn't look it up. Later I did, and I came across an interesting statistic that says that one out of three people will, in some point in their life, experience a panic attack. And I thought, wow, what is that? Now, I had a personal experience of that, but I'm not going to share that today because it's going to take too much time. Finally, just to conclude about courage, Swami Kriyananda defined courage, human courage. There's three types of human courage: blind, passive, and dynamic. And blind courage just goes out. It's fearlessness in the wrong way. In other words, foolhardiness. You just go out there and do whatever. And that's often the case of some people, but not what we're talking about here. The second courage is passive courage, which is good. And he defined that as the strength to adjust our consciousness to the reality. And that's good. And to be that too, because it begins with that. We have to see what's happening. We adjust, we accept it, and we're going to deal with whatever. That's you know, being accepting of that and willing to face. That's the second kind of courage. And then he defined dynamic courage, which is the strength not only to accept reality, but to confront it with another reality of our own making. In other words, rather than just accepting, oh, I got a problem here, confront it, accept, yes, okay, but then confront it with the solution. And he said that's a higher form of courage, in human courage. But he says we need to also summon a fourth kind of courage, and this is known as divine courage. And divine courage is the awareness of God's presence within. When God resides within us, what can possibly harm us? We have that courage, but it's not only courage, because remember, courage is also built on confidence and faith. We have confidence. This is what we really want. We need confident courage based upon experience. By putting these things to the test, and slowly as we put them to the test, we gain the faith that this actually works. Think of David and Goliath. David was not afraid. He showed courage, but he was also supremely confident. He knew, one, he had the physical tools, his sling, which in those days was deadly, and he was a shepherd. He would knock out the wolves and the wild animals protecting his sheep easily. And he knew he could defeat Goliath. But he also had, he was divinely guided. Today you will die, Goliath, and meet your end. He was confident because he had God's presence within. So human courage is to act in the faith that God is with you. Divine courage is to act in the absolute knowledge, you see, that God is with you. And that's what all of us are working to. Again, that divine faith, which is based upon knowledge and experience, putting these things to the test. And that, of course, takes courage to be able to do that. The absolute assurance that God's presence is within. And to know that God is our armor. So, and if we know that as devotees, where can worry be? Why worry about these things? Be reasonable, you know, can be balanced, but there's no need to worry if God is with her. And so some additional, all the commonplace, you might say, things that we do, practice, you know, Master said something, if you're nervous, take a cold shower. Now, he also said, if you're nervous, take a hot bath. Well, it could go either way. Learn, you know, whatever that, I think, what courage is, practicing in the little ways, and then have that ability to bring it to mind. And I think one of the greatest things is satsang in terms of spiritual environment. Keep the company of those people who are calm and collected and centered in the midst of trials. Swami Kriyananda is like this, but many people are like that. They have that ability. They are able to keep their center in all situations. This is how we want to be. But you start small and then you build up. And from that, ultimately, through your experience, you'll be able to summon that power. Look fear in the face, as Swami Sri Yukteswar said, and it will cease to bother you. God bless, and let's come back next week, and joy to all of you.